Loot and Plunder After the War, Part 3. Technical Marvels. An article in Harper's Magazine, written just over a year after the end of the war, lists just a few of the technological marvels that the US and British troops found and stole, along with all the German patents. These inventions, and the technology, was farmed out to special interests, mostly in the USA. And this is by Lester C. Walker, and it's from October 1946, and it's entitled War Secrets by the Thousands, and it's on page 329 of Harper's Magazine. What did we find? You'd like some outstanding examples from the War Secrets collection? The head of the communications unit of Technical Industrial Intelligence Branch opened his desk drawer and took out the tiniest vacuum tube I had ever seen. It was about half a thumb size. "Notice, it is heavy porcelain," he said, "not glass, and thus virtually indestructible. It is 1,000 watt, 1/10 the size of similar American tube. Today our manufacturers know the secret of making it. And here's something." He pulled some brown, papery-looking ribbon off a spool. It was 1/4 inch thick, with a dull and a shiny side. "That's magnetophone tape," he said. "It's plastic, metallized on one side with iron oxide. In Germany, that supplanted phonograph recordings. A day's radio program can be magnetized on one reel. You can demagnetize it, wipe it off, and put a new program on at any time. No needle, so absolutely no noise or record wear. An hour-long reel costs 50 cents. He showed me then what had been two of the most closely guarded technical secrets of the war, the infrared device, which the Germans invented for seeing at night, and the remarkable diminutive generator which operated it. German cars could drive at any speed in a total blackout, seeing objects clear as day 200 meters ahead. Tanks with this device could spot targets 2 miles away. As a sniper scope, it enabled German riflemen to pick off a man in total blackness. There was a sighting tube and a selenium screen out front. The screen caught the incoming infrared light, which drove electrons from the selenium along the tube to another screen, which was electrically charged and fluorescent. A visible image appeared on this screen. Its clearness and its accuracy for aiming purposes were phenomenal. Inside the tube, distortion of the stream of electrons by the Earth's magnetism was even allowed for. The diminutive generator, 5 inches across, stepped up current from an ordinary flashlight battery to 15,000 volts. It had a walnut-sized motor, which spun a rotor at 10,000 RPM, so fast that originally it had destroyed all lubricants with the great amount of ozone that it produced. The Germans had developed a new grease, chlorinated paraffin oil. The generator then ran for 3,000 hours. A canvas bag on the sniper's back housed the device. His rifle had 2 triggers. He pressed one for a few seconds to operate the generator and the scope, then the other to kill his man in the dark. "That captured secret," my guide declared, "we first used at Okinawa to the bewilderment of the Japs." We got, in addition to these prize secrets, the technique and the machine for making the world's most remarkable electronic condenser. Millions of condensers are essential to the radio and radar industry. Our condensers were always made of metal foil. This one is made of paper, coated with 1/250,000 of an inch of vaporized zinc. 40% smaller, 20% cheaper than our condensers. It is also self-healing. That is, if a breakdown occurs, like a fuse blowing out, the zinc film evaporates, the paper immediately insulates, and the condenser is right again. It keeps on working, through multiple breakdowns, at 50% higher voltage than our condensers. To most American radio experts, this is magic, double distilled. Mica was another thing. None is mined in Germany, so during the war, our signal corps was mystified. Where was Germany getting it? One day, a certain piece of mica was handed to one of our experts in the US Bureau of Mines for analysis and opinion. Natural mica, he reported, with no impurities. But the mica was synthetic. The Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Silicate Research had discovered how to make it, and, something which had always eluded scientists, in large sheets. We know now, thanks to Fiat teams, that ingredients of natural mica were melted in crucibles of carbon capable of taking 2,350 degrees of heat, and then, this was the real secret, cooled in a special way. Complete absence of vibration was the first essential. Then two forces, directly perpendicular to each other, were applied. One, vertically, was a controlled gradient of temperature in the cooling. At right angles to this, horizontally, was introduced a magnetic field. This forced the formation of the crystals in large laminated sheets on that plane. You see this, the head of communications unit, TIIB, said to me. It was metal and looked like a complicated doll's house with the roof off. It is the chassis or frame for a radio. To make the same thing, Americans would machine cut, hollow, shape, fit, a dozen different processes. This is done on a press in one operation. It is called the cold extrusion process. We do it with some soft, splattery metals, but by this process the Germans do it with cold steel. Thousands of parts, now made as castings or drop forgings or from malleable iron, can now be made in this way. The production speed increase is a little matter of 1,000%. This one war secret alone, many American steelmen believe, will revolutionise dozens of our metal fabrication industries. In textiles, the War Secrets collection has produced so many revelations that American textile men are a little dizzy. There is a German rayon weaving machine discovered a year ago by the American knitting machine team, which increases production in relation to floor space by 150%. Their Lynx loom produces a ladderless, run-proof hosiery. New German needle-making machinery, it is thought, will revolutionise that business in both the United Kingdom and the United States. There is a German method for pulling the wool from sheepskins without injury to hide or fibre by use of an enzyme. Formerly, the puller, a trade secret, was made from animal pancreas from American packing houses. During the war, the Nazis made it from a mould called Aspergill paracoticus, which they seeded in bran. It results not only in better wool, but in 10% better yield. Another discovery was a way to put a crimp in viscous rayon fibres, which gives them the appearance, warmth, wear, resistance and reaction to dyes of wool. The secret here, our investigators found, was the addition to the cellulose of 25% fish protein. But of all the industrial secrets, perhaps, the biggest windfall came from the laboratories and plants of the great German cartel, IG Farberindustrie. Never before, it is claimed, was there such a storehouse of secret information. It covers liquid and solid fuels, metallurgy, synthetic rubber, textiles, chemicals, plastics, drugs, and dyes. One American dye authority declares, quote, "It includes the production know-how and the secret formulas for over 50,000 dyes. Many of them are faster and better than ours. Many are colours we were never able to make before. The American dye industry will be advanced at least 10 years." Close quote. In matters of food, medicine, and branches of the military art, the finds of the search teams were no less impressive, and in aeronautics and guided missiles they proved to be downright alarming. One of the food secrets the Nazis had discovered was a way to sterilise fruit juices without heat. The juice was filtered, then cooled, then carbonated and stored under 8 atmospheres of carbon dioxide pressure. Later, the carbon dioxide was removed. The juice passed through another filter, which, this time, germ-proofed it and then was bottled. Something, perhaps, for American canners to think about. milk pasteurisation by ultraviolet light has always failed in other countries, but the Germans have found out how to do it by using light tubes of great length and simultaneously how to enrich the milk with vitamin D. At a plant in Kiel, British searchers of the Joint Intelligence Objectives Committee found that cheese was being made, good quality Hollander and Tilsiter, by a new method at unheard-of speed. 80 minutes from the renneting to the hooping of the curd, report the investigators. The cheese industry around the world had never been able to equal that. Butter in a creamery near Hamburg was being produced by something long wished for by the American butter makers, a continuous butter making machine, an invention of dairy equipment manufacturers in Stuttgart. It took up less space than American churns and turned out £1,500 an hour. The machine was promptly shipped to this country to be tested by the American Butter Institute. Among other food innovations was a German way of making yeast in almost limitless quantities. The waste sulfite liquor from the beechwood used to manufacture cellulose was treated with an organism known to bacteriologists as Candida arborea at temperatures higher than ever used in yeast manufacture before. The finished product served as both animal and human food. Its caloric value is four times that of lean meat, and it contains twice as much protein. The Germans had also developed new methods of preserving food by plastics and new advanced refrigeration techniques. Refrigeration and air conditioning on German U-boats had become so efficient that the submarines could travel from Germany to the Pacific, operate there for 2 months, and then return to Germany without having to take on fresh water for the crew. A secret plastics mixture, among its ingredients were polyvinyl acetate, chalk and talc, was used to coat bread and cheese. A loaf, fresh from the oven, was dipped, dried, redipped, then heated half an hour at 285 degrees. It would be unspoiled and good to eat 8 months later. As for medical secrets in this collection, one army surgeon has remarked, some of them will save American medicine years of research. Some of them are revolutionary, like, for instance, the German technique for treatment after prolonged and usually fatal exposure to cold. This discovery, revealed to us by Major Alexander's search already mentioned, reversed everything medical science thought about the subject. In every one of the dread experiments, the subjects were most successfully revived, both temporarily and permanently, by immediate immersion in hot water. In two cases of complete standstill of heart and cessation of respiration, a hot bath at 122 degrees brought both subjects back to life. Before our war with Japan ended, this method was adopted as a treatment for use by all American air sea rescue services, and it is generally accepted by medicine today. German medical researchers had discovered a way to produce synthetic blood plasma, called Capain. It was made on a commercial scale and equated natural plasma in results. Another discovery was Periston, a substitute for the blood liquid. An oxidation production of adrenaline, adrenochrome, was produced in quantity successfully only by the Nazis and was used with good results in combating high blood pressure, of which 750,000 persons die annually in the United States. Today, we have the secret of its manufacture and considerable supplies. Likewise, of great importance medically, were certain researches by Dr. Boris Rogowski of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute of Biophysics at Frankfurt. These were on the ionization of air as related to health. Positively ionized air was discovered to have deleterious effects upon human well-being and to account for the discomfort and depression felt at times when the barometer is falling. In many persons, it was found, its presence brought on asthma, hay fever, and nervous tension. It raised high blood pressure, sometimes to the danger point. It would bring on the symptoms common in mountain sickness, labored and rapid breathing, dizziness, fatigue, sleepiness. Negatively, ionized air, however, did all the opposite. It was exhilarating, creating a feeling of high spirits and well-being. Mental depression was wiped out by it. In pathological cases, it steadied breathing, reduced high blood pressure, was a check on allergies and asthma. The importance of its presence, wherever human beings live, work, or recuperate from illness, may someday make its production one of the major functions of air conditioning. But of higher significance for the future were the Nazi secrets in aviation and in various types of missiles. The V2 rocket, which bombed London, an Army Air Force publication reports, was just a toy compared to what the Germans had up their sleeve. When the war ended, we now know they had 138 types of guided missiles in various stages of production or development, using every known kind of remote control and fuse, radio, radar, wire, continuous wave, acoustics, infrared light beams and magnetics to name some, and for power, all methods of jet propulsion for either subsonic or supersonic speeds. Jet propulsion had even been applied to helicopter flight. The fuel was piped to combustion chambers at the rotor blade tips, where it exploded, whirling the blades around like a lawn sprinkler or pinwheel. As for rocket propulsion, their A4 rocket, which was just getting into large-scale production when the war ended, was 46 feet long, weighed over 24,000 pounds, and travelled 230 miles. It rose 60 miles above the Earth and had a maximum speed of 3,735 miles an hour, three times that of the Earth's rotation at the equator. The secret of its supersonic speed, we know today, lay in its rocket motor, which used liquid oxygen and alcohol for fuel. It was either radio-controlled or self-guided to its target by gyroscopic means. Since its speed was supersonic, it could not be heard before it struck. Another German rocket, which was coming along, was the A9. This was bigger still, 29,000 pounds, and had wings, which gave it a flying range of 3,000 miles. It was manufactured at the famous Peenemünde Army Experiment Station, and achieved the unbelievable speed of 5,870 miles an hour. A long-range rocket-motored bomber, which the war documents indicate, was never completed, merely because of the war's quick ending, would have been capable of flight from Germany to New York in 40 minutes. Pilot-guided from a pressurized cabin, it would have flown at an altitude of 154 miles. Launching was to be by catapult at 500 miles an hour, and the ship would rise to its maximum altitude in as short a time as 4 minutes. There, fuel exhausted, it would glide through the outer atmosphere, bearing down on its target. With 100 bombers of this type, the Germans hoped to destroy any city on Earth in a few days' operations. Little wonder, then, that today Army Air Force experts declare publicly that in rocket power and guided missiles, the Nazis were ahead of us by at least 10 years. The Germans even had devices ready which would take care of pilots forced to leave supersonic planes in flight. Normally, a pilot who stuck his head out at such speeds would have it shorn off. His parachute, on opening, would burst in space. To prevent these calamitous happenings, an ejector seat had been invented which flung the pilot clear instantaneously. His chute was already burst, that is, made of latticed ribbons, which checked his fall only after the downdrag of his weight began to close its holes. A Nazi variation of the guided air missile was a torpedo for underwater work, which went unerringly to its mark, drawn by the propeller sound of the victim's ship from as far away as 10 miles. This missile swam 30 feet below the water at 40 miles an hour and left no wake. When directly under its target, it exploded. All such revelations naturally raised the question, was Germany so far advanced in air, rocket and missile research that, given a little more time, she might have won the war? Her war secrets, as now disclosed, would seem to indicate that possibility, and the Deputy Commanding General of Army Air Forces Intelligence, Air Technical Service Command, has told the Society of Aeronautical Engineers within the past few months that, quote, the Germans were preparing rocket surprises for the whole world in general, and England in particular, which would have, it is believed, changed the course of the war if the invasion had been postponed for so short a time as half a year. Close quote. For the release and dissemination of all these one-time secrets, the Office of the Publication Board was established by an order of President Truman within 10 days after Japan surrendered. The order directed that not only enemy war secrets should be published, but also, with some exceptions, all American secrets, scientific and technical, of all government war boards. The Office of Scientific Research and Development, the National Research Council, and other such, and thereby was created what is being termed now the biggest publishing problem a government agency has ever had to handle. For the war secrets, which conveniently used to be counted in scores, will run to 750,000 separate documentary items, 2/3 of them on aeronautics, and will require several years and several hundreds of people to screen and prepare them for wide public use. Today, translators and abstractors of the Office of Technical Services, successor to the OPB, are processing them at the rate of about 1,000 a week, indexing and cataloguing the part of the collection which will be permanently kept may require more than 2 million cards, and at Wright Field, the task is so complicated that electric punch card machines are to be installed. A whole new glossary of German-English terms has had to be compiled, something like 40,000 words on new technical and scientific items. With so many documents, it has, of course, been impossible because of time and money limitations to reprint or reproduce more than a very few here, to tell the public what is available. Therefore, the OTS issues a bibliography weekly. This contains the newest war secrets information as released, with titles, prices of copies currently available or to be made up, and an abstract of contents. The original document, or the microfilm copy, is then generally sent to the Library of Congress, which is now the greatest depository. To make them more easily accessible to the public, the library sends copies, when enough are available, to about 125 so-called depository libraries throughout the United States. And is the public doing anything with these one-time war secrets? It is. It is eating them up. As many as 20,000 orders have been filled in a month, and the order rate is now 1,000 items a day. Scientists and engineers declare that the information is cutting years from the time we would devote to problems already scientifically investigated, and American businessmen, a run through the publication board's letters file, shows the following. The Bendix Company in South Bend, Indiana, writes for a German patent on the record player changer with records stacked above the turntable. Pillsbury Mills wants to have what is available on German flour and bread production methods. Kendall Manufacturing Company wants insect repellent compounds. Pioneer Hybrid Corn Company, Iowa, asks about interrogation of research workers at the Agricultural High School at Hohenheim. Pacific Mills requests IG Farben's water repellent crease-resistant finish for spun rayon. The Polaroid Company would like something on the status of exploitation of photography and optics in Germany. There are, incidentally, 10 to 20,000 German patents yet to be screened. The most insatiable customer is AMTORG, the Soviet Union's Foreign Trade Organization. One of its representatives walked into the publication board office with a bibliography in hand and said, "I want copies of everything." The Russians sent one order in May for $5,594 worth, 2,000 separate war secrets reports. In general, they buy every report issued. Americans, too, think there is extraordinarily good prospecting in the war secrets load. Company executives practically park on the OTS's front doorstep, wanting to be first to get hold of a particular report on publication. Some information is so valuable that to get it a single day ahead of a competitor may be worth thousands of dollars, but the OTS takes elaborate precautions to be sure that no report is ever available to anyone before general public release. After a certain American aircraft company had ordered a particular captured war document, it was queried as to whether the information therein had made it or saved it any money. The cost of the report had been a few dollars. The company answered yes, at least $100,000. A research head of another business firm took notes for 3 hours in the OTS offices one day. "Thank you very much," he said as he stood to go. "The notes from these documents are worth at least $500,000 to my company." And after seeing the complete report, the German synthetic fibre industry, one American manufacturer remarked, quote, "This report would be worth $20 million to my company if I could have it exclusively," close quote. Of course, you and anybody else can now have it, and lots of other once secret information for a few dollars. All the war secrets as released are now completely in the public domain.